Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listing Podcast. I'm one half of your presenting duo. I'm Stu Within. Sitting opposite me via the means of Zoom
is the other third of the duo. It's Christopher William Glasson. How are you, mate? You okay?
I'm all right. I mean, we've already had a little chat that we're well excited, and we'll tell you why in a minute when we introduce our guest. I've been all right, mate. Yeah, not too bad. It's been a bit strange on the weather front. Like, when there was a bit of joy last week when it was told there's a road out of all of this this weirdness, and the sun come out, and it's fucking freezing again.
Of course it does, and it does it every year, mate, and I just don't let it trick me now. It's like, I won't fall for you when you say you've got chocolate down the back of your trousers. I don't fall for that trick anymore. I don't fall for when it's March and we see sunshine, or February. I just ignore it. I almost don't even look at it. Because I know this is what happens.
Well, before we introduce today's guest, let's thank our sponsors as well. So, first of all, I'm going to thank Bang Boom Creative, whose episode we dropped this week on Patreon, so people can go and listen to Luke's anniversary episode of 10 years of his business, where he has filmed some incredible people and things, some good, some not so good, which he really goes in on this episode. And he's just one of the besties, Luke. And Bang Boom Creative, just go and check them out, because if you want any kind of sort of photography and kind of high end video work, I actually socially distanced, but I attended a shoot that Luke done last week, and just watching him work is really, really impressive. I mean, it's quite unique. He does it all naked, but aside from that, it's he's a good guy. Who else do you want to name check, Christopher?
Other big naturists are our co-sponsors, Egg Fried. So Egg Fried is a streetwear label. They sell hip-hop, skate, punk, quai-inspired T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, trucker caps, handmade denim, very, very cool stuff. Pete, who predominantly does the graphic design, is, as I've said so many times, is one of the most fast-working and talented artists I've ever seen. And we're very happy to have them as sponsors. Some exciting news of what we'll be doing with them in the near future as well. We've got some exciting stuff to be doing. Oh,
and if you do discounts, like them,
yeah, let's get a discount.
Come on, get it right. Oh, unbelievable.
I haven't even started on today's episode and I'm already fumbling. You can get a discount if you type in the passcode Egg Salad. When it asks you for a coupon, you will get yourself a...
Right, now, why have you said passcode and coupon?
Same thing, mate. Same
right,
thing.
No, Chris, discount code.
Oh. If you...
Passcode. When have you ever said passcode in your life, ever? Oh, apart from when you're playing Dungeons & Dragons. When have you ever said passcode?
Isn't that what they used to ask for on Ask Jeeves? When you had a... yes, so yeah, Egg Salad, type that in. And you'll get yourself a nice fat discount.
Lovely stuff.
Final sponsor?
Love Beer, love-beer.co.uk. A beer specialist that will either turn up at your house, wherever, and he'll build you a bar, a really incredible bespoke bar. What it'll also do is kind of tip you off on what beers you need to be drinking. And not only that, it'll deliver them to your front door. So he will curate a list each month, and there's a current package on there consisting of five beers, which if you go back a few episodes, you can hear Chris and I and Charles, the owner of Love Beer, sampling them. And it's special. It's really special. So go and check out that. Order yourself some beers. And if you put in the discount code LBHCLP, you'll save yourself some money as well. So, yeah, get some nice clothes, get some booze, and then once you're hammered and you're looking good, get Luke to make a video of you. There you go. Anyway, speaking of booze, Chris.
It's a nice segue, mate. I'll let you introduce our special guest this week.
Well, hello, Karen Swift. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Karen, how do we introduce you? What is your official title?
I am a whiskey ambassador for SMWS in Queen Street in Edinburgh. So that's the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. We are independent bottlers, so we bottle our own whiskey from distilleries.
Incredible.
Wonder.
So I just taste and talk about whiskey all day long.
That's rubbish, isn't
professional,
it?
Professional booze hound.
Yeah. Yeah, fully trained.
Do you balance up being a booze hound by using the word ambassador? Because that really, like, that almost that kind of makes it sound super,
yeah,
super cool.
No. Anybody that knows me, no, I'm kidding nobody. I was born in Newcastle. I've trained long and hard, socially, professionally. Yeah, I'm not kidding anybody.
Well, Karen, today we're going to do, obviously, we're going to do top five whiskies. And, I mean, we will take a picture of this. And do you know what? I'm going to take a picture of it now before I forget, because I have a feeling that I probably won't be quite as switched on when we finish recording. But we're going to do top five whiskies. And you've sent us this incredible design, which I'm taking pictures of. Chris, jump in a sec, mate. Help me out.
Yes, I've just done that as well. Yeah, you've sent us a selection of five awesome Scotch malt whiskies for us to go through, taste, smell, enjoy on this episode. The last time we did a whiskey tasting, the great thing here, Karen, is that we can't be let out of our house afterwards. Because the last time we did I think it was like about 11 o'clock in the morning we started, and by about 4 we were an absolute mess, weren't we? So we've got Rob Gardner.
They were Irish whiskey.
It was, yeah. We've got Rob Gardner to thank for that one. But it was a great episode, and I think that has just set the scene for, you know, being so excited for today. And before we started recording, I was just saying how to let the whiskies air, like you requested. You know, we opened them, so I've had all these whiskies, just the aromas filling my lounge at the moment, and it just smells incredible.
That's what I was saying to you guys. I started bottling them up at 8 o'clock in the morning before I went to work, and I was like, living room smelling sweet.
If they say anything at work, Karen, and grab a quick word with you.
No, not yet.
Right.
Just to let you know a little bit of what I chose for you. I didn't want to go, obviously I work for an independent bottler, so you have to be a member to get access to the whiskies. So that just seemed a bit niche, and, you know, anybody that was listening wouldn't then be able to get the whiskies or get their hands on them. So it runs out of steam. It's not that interesting. So I picked kind of five of my favourites, quite selfishly. But I also picked two brand new whiskies that have come onto the scene in 2020, because I didn't think you'd have tasted them before, and they've made a huge impact from the second they've come out. So brand new distilleries. Nothing's really, I think the most expensive bottle's under £50.
Amazing.
So it's all quite achievable, all quite doable, and easy to get.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
That's really great.
Yeah.
I'd love to just let you say something else, Chris, but can we just drink one, please?
Go on then, we'll try one, and then we'll start off.
Are you drinking with us as well, Karen?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Wonderful.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
So, cheers, guys.
Are we starting
so
with
we've got five. So we've got five little bottles, and they're not little bottles. There's how much is in each of these bottles, would you say?
50 milliliters.
Okay, right. So the first one, so we taste it and then you tell us about it. How are we going to do this?
Well, the first thing you should do with the whiskey, you should have a look at the colour.
Okay.
If you're drinking it If we're going to start off right, we'll start off well. This will go out the window probably right. halfway through, but we'll start off good. Yeah, so have a look at the colour. You've got a lovely kind of rich ambery colour coming through. If you want to look like a real professional, give it a little swirl around the glass. You'll see you get some kind of vapours sticking to the glasses. Yeah. They call it the legs. Yeah. Little handy tip, if you go to anybody's house party and they give you whiskey and don't tell you what it is, give it a swirl around the glass. If it goes over halfway, they've given you decent stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So give it a swig, just, and then what about going halfway if it can get up the glass halfway?
It just tells you've got a really good quality. Right. You're going to get nice mouthfeel. You've got a little bit higher alcohol in that one, so somebody's giving you a decent dram.
Right, excellent.
When you're smelling the whiskey, a lot of people just stick their nose straight in it straight away.
Right, just done that.
And it kind of burns your nasal hair a little bit. It's really fierce. That's why I told you to open it up 15 minutes before, just to let the air get into it, let the alcohol kind of mellow out a little bit so you can actually smell the whiskey properly. Right. So if you just have a sniff of it.
Smells amazing.
Mm. Yeah. Should get some kind of light vanilla and a little bit of fruit coming in.
I did.
So the best bit, now take a little taste of it, hold it in your mouth a little bit longer than you normally would. That's just to give your taste buds a head up what you're doing.
Oh, that's the stuff.
Good stuff, eh? God.
I've been waiting to do that since we started talking about this Karen weeks ago. That's incredible.
Since the postman came.
That's wonderful. So what one is this then, Karen? What are we starting with?
This is a brand new whiskey on the market. It only came out last year for production. Nooknane, it's called. I don't know if you can see it there. Proper jazzy bottle as well. These guys have really gone for sustainability. They were quite concerned about how much waste there is involved in whiskey, how much people don't think about kind of what they're doing while they're making it. So these guys are 100% organic. They run in a really biodynamic fashion, concentrate completely on the whiskey. But for me, the second it came out, people were going mad for the bottles. It sold out in 24 hours, the first ever runoff that they did. They completely sold out. But for me, it was really, it's a very gentle whiskey, but has a long, lovely flavour profile for me. So you've got, whiskey has such a long history. When something comes along and just changes the scene of it straight away, and I am nearly in bottle number two now, which says a lot about me because I only got it in October. but it's one of those whiskies you can give to anybody and everybody's going to enjoy it. Really gentle, really nice nose and really nice flavour for me.
Karen,
I absolutely love it.
I think
it's... Sorry, Chris, go on.
No, go on, mate.
You sent us a bottle of water as well.
Yeah.
And so when I've been to Scotland and I've gone into, you know, bars and pubs and all the whiskey, it's always seen a little jug of water on the bar. And I was always told to put a little bit of water in the whiskey. What's the deal with that? Is that...
I mean, I would always say taste it first. Where I work, we serve only cask strength whiskey. We don't add any water to it. A lot of distilleries bring whiskey down to about 40 to 45% just so that everybody is going to enjoy it. It's kind of been agreed many years ago that that was a kind of enjoyable level of alcohol for everybody to be okay with it. And I mean, you want everybody to love your whiskey, right? You don't want somebody to go, that's burning the face off me. Mm. But with some whiskies, you will find that you get burn along your lips, along your tongue. So if you add a little bit of water, the kind of very dull big bang explanation for it is it changes the molecular structure. But actually what it does is it just pushes the flavours through for you. So we tend to add water to whiskey just to kind of enhance the flavour a little bit.
It opens it up. As my niece's boyfriend, actually the co-owner of Wilma's Cupcakery, who's good friends of ours, sometimes I go around there and I'll try their whiskey collection, which is epic. And Will will say to me, just a little bit of water. And then I'll put too much in. And he's like, you ruined it now. And I'm like, what? That was like a dribble. But he was like...
I gave you the little pipettes as well. For it. We have... our society that I work for was thought up by one radical human who is thankfully still with us. I absolutely adore him and hang on his every single word. Sir Pip, he's not a sir yet, but I'm going to knight him if it kills me. And we did a tasting with him way back last October, and I was just like an adoring child. And he complained about the pipettes being on the table and said, I don't know why you use these things. So I said to my friends, I'm not using the pipette anymore. So Pip said not to use it. And the next whiskey I went to, I absolutely rinsed it with the water and I was like, I'm going back to the pipette. That's the pipettes are there just so you can add a couple of drops.
And it's like drops, isn't it? It's like
drips, totally.
As opposed to pouring in.
And you'll find, you know, if you're getting a vanilla flavour, it'll start turning into kind of creme brulees, the cream, like chem pat that you get on the inside of chocolate eclairs. It just forces the flavour a little bit further. So we always advise to taste it first, though, because some whiskey, it just hits your palate and it's perfect and that's it. You know, and sometimes you can add a bit of water and it can die off as well. So I always say, if you're loving what it's doing, you like where it's at, continue.
If it's not
on,
broken,
you know?
Don't fix it. And that's...
Exactly.
That certainly is... Like you say, it's a whiskey you can give to a lot of people. You said there about the like the environmental impact, because I'm sort of like more and more becoming like this sort of person that you don't want to talk to because I think I'm better than everyone. Like, I'm now a vegan. I don't know how much I've said that on the podcast yet, Stu, but it's going to replace the fact that I was a black belt or I've got a first class degree. I think the new one is I'm a vegan. And,
excellent.
And I do it predominantly for environmental reasons. And and I would have never thought that the whiskey production had a great deal of waste in it, really. I guess.
Well, you might, if you see kind of the likes of Bruichladdy have started doing it as well. Nick Nean were the first to do this. That beautiful bottle that you see there, when you bought it, you got asked if you wanted a cardboard container with it as well. Yeah. That was the first. I knew they were going to go completely organic, but that was one of the questions they asked. And I was like, well, the bottle's beautiful. I don't really need it. You know, and that's all part. That's just the meticulous way that they're doing it. You know, a lot of places get barley brought in to the distillery. Right. So you've got to think of kind of the carbon footprint of that. Yeah. And then you've got also, once you're finished with the barley, you'll have in the bottom of your mills, you'll have like draft, which then goes out to farms to feed cattle, which is quite organic, but still it's traveling. Yeah. This distillery is actually built on a farm. Okay. So everything that they're getting, everything that they're using is there. They're actually producing 90% of their own energy.
Incredible.
And they're with bulbs to rest. Yeah. And I mean, the beautiful designs that you see on the bottle, they're all, it's fully organic glass, which is pretty much impossible to get. And also they're painted with lead-free paint. So they're really going the complete extra yard for it.
It's just a shame that Neen drop them all off by helicopter, I heard.
But I mean, for me, straight away, you know, I think the place that I work for, we don't put any of the names on the bottles of the whiskey, and that's super important because we are creatures of habit. You know, we'll go to the same places, we'll sit in the same seats.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell people the tastings. I even go to the same toilet in the same places that I go to.
Yeah.
So, you know, when it comes to picking drinks, we pretty much know what we're going to order before we even get to the bar. Yeah. You know, and especially whiskey drinkers, they like this type of whiskey because their granddad got them drinking it, or they like that because their friend bought it when they left a job. So we're very kind of traditional. So my work doesn't put any of the distillery numbers on it, and it's kind of run by flavour. So it pushes you out of your box and stops you kind of thinking, I'm going for this at this point. But for a new distillery like that, it just started producing 5 years ago. Well, just start actually making the whiskey 5 years ago and bottling last year, to then come in and make such a huge impact in the market. It's already become my kind of go-to at-home dram. And I absolutely love giving it to people because it's just straight away, you know, something different, new, but amazing.
I do feel like I'm going to have to grab a bottle.
I think you should. I definitely think you should. Yeah. It's a banging whiskey.
Just before we move on to the second one, obviously Chris has touched on becoming a vegan. What's, if you had to complement a whiskey with a food, what complements it best, in your opinion?
I do this at work as well. I'm also the food and beverage manager. I'm like the Mr. Ben of the society. Cleaner cook. No, I started off actually running the restaurant first. I couldn't get into the society as an ambassador. So I just thought, it came up for a Christmas, they advertised for Christmas stuff in the restaurant. And I just thought, just going to go in and play stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And immediately they were like, you do know this is just for the restaurant, don't you? And I was like, oh, is it? Oh, okay, that's a shame. I'm going to have to leave in 4 weeks. I'm coming up with my second year now, so that plan went. My boss still doesn't know it was a ruse, in all honesty. But I ended up managing the restaurant, and we did tasting menus as well. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Like, people wouldn't believe how whiskey pairs so well. Like a smoky peated whiskey, I tend to put that either with... I am always in charge of the cheese and whiskey tasting because I love both equally. So peated whiskey with blue cheese is absolutely phenomenal. It works so well together. You know, you'll find the smoke will come down a little bit just to let the blue come through, and then it'll come right in at the end. They complement each other so much. But also the same thing, like smoked salmon, a smoked salmon starter with peated whiskey, insanely good as well. It's amazing the way that food pulls and pushes through with whiskey. You know, people tend to go for wine and think that's the only thing that goes with it. And a sherry cask whiskey with dark chocolate, absolutely brilliant. And I've done a tasting before where I got the kitchen to make kind of French patisserie. And we had that with sherry and wine cask whiskies too, because the sweetness kind of bounces off each other. Yeah, really interesting. It's really cool to do tasting menus with whiskey and food as well.
There was a wonderful place in London, in Kentish Town, called Nowhere Special. And it had a menu. It was a cocktail place. It had a menu, and you didn't really quite know what you was getting, because every kind of like thing on the menu was kind of cryptic. But one of the pairings was a whiskey with a popcorn that they'd done it with. Yeah. But it worked. It worked so well. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
And I think the thing is, like, food isn't one-dimensional. A lot of different things will happen when you're eating food. A lot of different things complement it. And I think whiskey works in exactly the same way. You know, at the start of a whiskey, you'll get a different taste on your palate to the very end of it. You know, that lengthy flavour that you're left afterwards. Even now, still, I've only had maybe two mouthfuls of the Nicknian, and I can still kind of feel white fruits in my mouth. So, I mean, food does exactly the same. So they work together amazingly. I get really boring when I talk about food.
I think this is fascinating.
I'm literally salivating.
Yeah, same. I think it's fascinating. Yeah. Shall we try number two? And then I've got a few more questions for you, Karen.
Definitely.
I'm sorry. So, I do apologise for the glass now.
It doesn't look like a full measure. That's all I have an issue with. So the next one that we're going on to, you'll notice the colour is completely different, a lot darker in colour. The nose for me, I get a lot kind of different fruit on this one. I'm starting to get some apples coming through a little bit. I get some kind of dark fruit also. If you have a taste of it. It's one of my all-time favourite whiskies.
That's incredible.
I absolutely love whiskey, yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. So this is, surprisingly, Glenfiddich 15.
Yeah.
I had a certain amount of snobbery when it came to Glenfiddich. I'm ashamed to say it. One of my nearest and dearest friends is a brand ambassador, so second he hears this, I'm going to get booted. But I've worked in whiskey bars for a long, long time, you know, and I always kind of thought of Glenfiddich as just being, you see it everywhere. It's airports. Every single bar you go to, everybody knows it. And it was just something that I really ignored. My job, I always thought, was to find people something new, something exciting. You know, they've come to Edinburgh or they're whiskey fans. It's like, okay, you like that, but I'm going to find you this. That was kind of always what I was looking to do, find them something new and exciting. But I had training with a brand ambassador from Glenfiddich, and he actually made me feel so ashamed. Firstly, I didn't realise it's one of the few distilleries which is still family-owned, but family-run. Wow. So all of the decisions in this distillery are still made by the family. Very organically done. It's very small, like, yes, we will use that cask. No, we won't do that. That's a stupid idea. Whereas a lot of people still may keep a distillery in the family, but they won't be working in it. They won't be making decisions, you know. They'll just be taking some of the coin and having a lot in the house. Yeah, exactly, exactly. But they... Every single little bit is meticulously looked after. And the one thing that they are interested in and the one thing that drives everything that they do is your enjoyment of that spirit. And at the time, I was just thinking, God, it's such a big organization, but it's just such a small thing that's at the heart of it. That's all they care about. Every single person that drinks it enjoys every single little element that they've put in.
If you tie your business ethos back to one thing, it's kind of makes the whole thing an easier thing to manage, doesn't it? Because you're keeping it simple, really.
Yeah, yeah. But you wouldn't, I wouldn't have believed before from something that big that you see in every, you've seen adverts, you know, they sponsor big international festivals and stuff like that, sporting events. You would expect it to just be so big and so sterile that nobody actually cared. But every single little detail, even to the point of the cask that it goes into, how it's dealt with, they're constantly looking at it all the time just to make sure that people like us sit with a glass and go, man, that's good. You know, and it's a beautiful thing. I absolutely love it. This whiskey in particular, the Solera cask, the name of that comes from when they went over to Jerez in Spain. That's where your sherry casks come from. You notice once they got into the sherry houses, the sherry bodegas were actually taking casks and placing them on top of each other and filling from the top and letting the sherry run through all of these casks to get extra maturation and extra flavour coming from the wood. So they were like, that's a brilliant idea. Why don't we do that? So that's exactly what they've done with this cask. This is American oak barrels and sherry barrels, which is put into a massive Solera vat. And it goes in there and gets extra maturation. So in hindsight, it's filled from the top exactly like the sherry barrels are. And then the bottles are filled from the bottom. So what you're getting is not really 15-year-old. It's way older. Wow. And it comes in at about £35 a bottle.
Wow.
You can get it in supermarkets and it's absolutely so amazing.
Sorry to interrupt there, Karen. It's just funny because like Glenfiddich, so my history, my story with whiskey was 15 years old, something like that, when we'd all go around each other's houses and we'd raid a cabinet of alcohol, right? And you'd drink whatever, you'd all end up feeling quite ill because you were just young, you were stupid. And I remember a few friends having a few, and these were terrible whiskies. And I'm not going to name the brands, but I remember trying some whiskey back then. And until I was 28, didn't look back at whiskey. I was just like, whiskey is not for me. I always thought it was cool until I tried it. And then I went to America, went to Vegas, and we were amongst all the other wild stories that we've probably told on this podcast at one point or another. The one other thing that I discovered there was at 21's table, my friend says, you've got to have a highball. And that was, you know, so that's just it's whiskey with, is it ginger ale? I believe it's ginger ale.
Ginger ale or soda, yeah.
And that was it. Obviously, it was mixed with, you know, something to make it more palatable. But after that, I remember coming home and thinking, I quite like whiskey. And it was Glenfiddich that I bought. And that was it. Like, it absolutely cemented my whole thing. And it wasn't like, you know, like a premium bottle, like 35. I wasn't getting the cheapest whiskies in the supermarket or whatnot. I was getting like the standard Glenfiddich. And I loved it. And I couldn't believe how my whole relationship with whiskey changed on that. And so, yeah, when you showed me the bottle there, I was like, yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. It's a quality whiskey.
It's a terrible thing how most people are introduced to whiskey, in all honesty. I mean, my granddad was responsible for me. I've got cousins and siblings, and I'm the youngest one, and none of them liked it. So I think he just was like, you're getting it, and you're going to like it. So I was hammered with it, absolutely hammered with whiskey until I did like it. But the amount of people, even as adults, that come into bars and say, okay, get them a Laphroaig 10, you know, this really medicinal smoky whiskey, and say it's his first whiskey he's ever had, and I'm like, that is not the way to go, you know. So it either starts with somebody pushing something really like heavy on you that you can't deal with and you go, I'm not going back, or it starts off nicked from somebody's dad's drinking cabinet and absolutely battered and not being able to face it, you know. I remember last summer at my work, I was trying to forcibly make a woman like whiskey again, and I actually had to have a word with myself and just go, let it go, Karen, she's not going to be okay. But I got her on highballs, so it was
exactly
fine.
That's the gateway. Did you so your your affection with affinity with whiskey started with your granddad, basically? Amazing. And like, so what was he into? What sort of whiskies, can you remember what he was introducing you to?
My granddad had me on, it was more blends, to be honest with you, because I mean, back in the day, everybody was only drinking blends. Single malts weren't getting any money put into them at all. Nobody cared about them. Blends were quite easy to put a lot of rubbish whiskey together and get it out. Yeah. We were quite happy to drink it. There just wasn't the same following what there is now. You know, I think now because obviously where cuisine's moved on, the way we dine out, what we do has completely changed. And whiskey at the moment is in such a high that it's unbelievable. But my granddad kind of fed me. I think I was White and Mackay. Definitely had some famous grouse, without a doubt. But then, you know, people, I remember when I first started working in whiskey, old boys would come into bars and be like, do you have any White Mackay? And I remember saying to one of my managers when I first started, I was like, we need to get a bottle of grouse, we need to get a bottle of White Mackay. You know, you need to have whiskey for these people. And he was like, I don't want to stock that. I was like, well, you've got Dalmore, which is in White Mackay, and has the same master blender, whose nose is in £4 million. And I was like, we've also got Tam Du, which is one of my favourite distilleries, which is in famous grouse. So I was like, so why are we not?
Right. I didn't know that. And he was like, Dalmore's one of my favourites. Dalmore, forgive me, because I've had it for a couple of years. That was the one that's got the silver, is it the stag or the elk? It's incredible. That for me is like my absolute weak spot for whiskey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And if you're ever at a loss, go on to YouTube and look for Richard Patterson, the master blender, for that. He is the most charismatic lunatic that there is. And he does a whole thing about sniffing wine, smelling whiskey, and then throwing it on the floor and then starting again. That's his whole way to get whiskey and your glass ready. And yeah, he's a beautiful character. He did some online training with us during lockdown part one. And at that stage, you know, we'd been told it was 2-3 weeks. We were just like, I'll paint the kitchen, it'll be fine, everything will be good. It was 4 months long, you know, and everybody was like starting to want to kill herself. And at that stage of like online training with our company chemist, everybody was getting a bit sick, didn't know what was happening. We're in pyjamas, weren't even washing our hair. Richard Patterson came on, master blender for Dalmore, and he had a tie pin on. He trimmed his moustache, his hair was Brill creamed, and he had a full suit on. I was just like, what a legend, like even in the middle of lockdown. But I mean, that is the thing with blends. You know, for me, that generation, they're the reason that we still have whiskey now. They were drinking blends when whiskey was rubbish. And they've put in the legwork, they've put in the money, they've made it successful. We're kind of piggybacking on the back of them as regular customers, you know. So in every blend, there's a great single malt. So don't let anybody tell you that a blend isn't a good whiskey, because it's just a lot of single malts brought together. That's all it is.
I had a very similar kind of journey to you, really, Chris. I remember, like, you know, my whole family were whiskey drinkers, and I always remember, like, but it would always have been bottles of Bells and Teachers and things like that, you know, at my granddad's, because I guess at the time it was probably the mass produced and the probably most affordable as well, and so there'd always be like bottles of that, and they'd always kind of get to the point of that where they'd all start drinking whiskey. And then my dad would always drink whiskey and water, and I always remember just thinking, oh, I'm going to try that. And I remember just like drinking it and just thinking, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever put in my mouth. But then that said, I was the same with beer, you know, at that young age as well. And obviously your palate changes, doesn't it? But I then think, you know, a lot, I think in, I went into the kind of the bourbon and coke phase as well, and just kind of done that until probably about sort of 10 years ago, really, when I just started sort of drinking Irish whiskey neat. And just, I guess, through sort of Jameson's and things like that, I'd started to kind of like think, oh, I don't want to put anything with this. And then when I went to Scotland, I went to the Nevis Dew distillery and done the tour. And it was really cool because when we got there, they were like, we're shutting. And I was like, oh, man, like we've driven a long way to come here. And he was like, I'll go on then. And he said, I'll take you around myself. So instead of being like one of like 30 people, we got a one-to-one, which was amazing. And just kind of got the whole tour and then obviously just got to sample it with a pipette of water, bizarrely. And I just thought, oh, wow. And then spent the next sort of 10 days driving around Scotland and just at every opportunity, like when I wasn't driving, just to clarify, trying more whiskey. And I just never look back. And it's like, nah, you know, as we've spoke about before, really, because we don't really drink a lot of beer, to be honest. The only time I really drink beer is if I'm drinking with Charles. The rest of the time, it's like, it's wine, and then get to a certain point, it's like, now I want some whiskey. And like, yeah.
It's amazing, honestly. I mean, I firmly believe, and I stand by, there's a whiskey in there for every single palate, regardless of what you like and what you don't like. But there is... just people have that terrible introduction to whiskey, you know. I mean, I was obviously very pliable as a northern girl. I was like, yes, I love it. It's fine. It's healthy. And then, I mean, I got too terrible. He made me drink whiskey. And then I remember going to my nan when I was maybe 15, 16, you know, just starting to find your feet with alcohol and socializing and stuff. And all of my friends liked very kind of sickly sweet alcohol. They were drinking Archers and lemonade and, you know, all of like Southern Comfort and stuff. And I said to my nan, I was like, Nan, I don't like any of that. What should I drink? And she was like, drink gin. And I was like, doesn't it make you cry? She was like, just drink through the tears, you'll be fine. And that's
the worst of grandmother's things. Ruin.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you must have looked incredible in a nightclub. What's up with Karen? Oh, it's all right. She's just drinking gin. She's fine.
She loves it.
She'll stop crying in a minute.
She'll lie to you that sweet stuff.
It doesn't make me cry at all. Like, it doesn't make me cry. But, you know,
but
just that attitude, you know, of just get on with it. You'll be fine.
I'm still a beard. Well, I'm not. I barely touch alcohol now. I've loved alcohol my whole life, and I'd rather enjoy small amounts now. So I'd rather just enjoy a good quality whiskey or a nice one or two beers. And that's why, you know, it's great when we catch up with Charles or we buy from Charles, because it's always just curated nice quality lager or stout. I can't drink like large quantities of anything anymore. But that's how I enjoy my whiskey now. Just a nice quality little bit of it. Because, yeah, I can't handle it otherwise.
Well, I'm still going. I'm done. I'm on to the next one. How are you getting on, Chris?
I've got the tiniest sip from two to finish.
Try and hang on to it if you can, as you just drunk it. Bit of luck.
No, I've saved a little bit in the bottle as well.
Try and keep a little bit if you can, because you'll find... as you go on, your palate's going to alter, and kind of your perception of the whiskey will change.
Called inebriation, Karen? Is that what that is?
Probably, yeah.
I thought you was going to say save a bit, because before we started recording, Karen mentioned the words breakfast whiskey. Explain a little bit about that, please.
Breakfast whiskey, yeah. My company releases 20 to 25 new whiskies every single month.
Wow.
So as a team, we all sit down and taste them together. That's a very lost afternoon. It's a ton of fun, but it's a lost afternoon. But there's always a whiskey that comes out that I go, that's a breakfast whiskey. And everyone's like, Karen, stop it with a breakfast whiskey. But for me, it just means, so the regulations that are in place for whiskey, it has to start off in an oak barrel. It has to be in that barrel for 3 years. And it also has to be over 40% proof. American oak barrels are kind of traditionally used a lot of the times from bourbon. So they give you nice kind of vanilla flavours. You get honey coming through, a little bit of fruit. So whenever I start to get those flavours, I'm like, it's a breakfast whiskey. And my colleagues are like, but it's also 62%. And I'm like, it's that. Don't worry. So I get a lot of tastings with different types of people. And the real traditionalists are always like, Karen, no to breakfast whiskey. Whereas I think it's a nice opener. It's a nice way to start. It's a breakfast whiskey.
On a completely different subject, but alcohol related, I at uni would drink White Russians for breakfast. And, you know, I there's a little part of me that thought I was being rad. Stu hates that side of me. And but then like 20 years later, because that's how old I am now, it wasn't that long ago, a couple of years back, someone said, White Russians were invented by a Tsar and it was their breakfast cocktail. I was like, I wasn't crazy at all. There was this like crazy, well, crazy Russians are doing it as well. But yeah, so I'm on board for the breakfast whiskey.
Absolutely. Breakfast whiskey, that's two people now.
Well, so if you're in an airport, right? Rules are out the window. Okay, it's 24-hour drinking. You're flying at 6 a.m., Karen. You're in the bar 4 a.m.
Yeah.
You're having a whiskey.
I'm having a pint and a whiskey.
Good work.
That's another argument me and one of my friend who works for Glenfiddich, actually, they have a thing in Scotland called a half and a half, which is a half of beer, ale, whatever, and a dram. And he gets on at me all the time because I have a pint and a half. And he's like, it's not a pint, Karen. And I'm like, I just like all of my drink in one glass. And it's a constant argument between us all the time because he keeps on buying me halves. And I'm like, I don't want a half, change it. So yeah, I would have a pint and a dram, nice. Definitely.
Good work.
I think a pint just, you know, the beer just gets your palate ready for the fact it's going to have alcohol. That's why when you taste the first whiskey, we always say, just keep a little bit in your mouth for a little bit longer because your taste buds are going to kind of go, wow, this is a lot of booze. You gave me no warning. Yeah. And they're not going to pick up as much. Your taste buds are going to retract because it's kind of deciding whether it's poison or whether you're meant to do it. So for me, my excuse for the pint is it gets your taste buds ready and it doesn't think it's poison.
No, exactly. And that used to be my excuse when, you know, obviously the common thing of I'm gonna line my stomach. Before I hit the hard stuff, I'm going to line my stomach with maybe 4 super strength ales and then I'll get on the whiskey.
Sounds like a fantastic plan to me. So we ready for whiskey number 3? Sure.
Let's do it.
Okay, so if you have a look at the colour of this one, completely different. We've got beautiful orange kind of... When I actually poured the whiskies, I took a picture and sent them to my best friend and she was like, what's the red one in the middle? And I mean, it is that extreme. You should get a lot more, even though it's been sat out for a while now, you should get quite a lot of booze still on the nose. This is where your waters might come into key for this one.
That burns.
Yes, this is a cask strength whiskey. So that's predominantly why I sent you the water as well. But have a taste of it first and see how you get on. This is from probably my favourite distillery. It's taken me a long time to actually get to the stage where I say my favourite. But this is Tandu from up in Speyside. And they only use sherry casks. So all of your colour's natural. It's all coming from the casks that they choose. And you get a really big kind of Christmas spice, nutmeg, cinnamon, rum raisin flavors coming through, and it's all from the cask selections.
That's spectacular.
That was the one that did when I was pouring them out earlier. I was like, oh god,
yeah,
that's when my taste buds started going.
And we'd add a couple of drops of water to this one because she is this, you know, I think it's 57%.
Wow, gosh,
58.5.
Couple of little drops,
just a couple of drops. The thing with adding water is you can add more, but you can't take it out. So I normally just add kind of 2 drops to begin with and see how I get on. If it's still burning, I'll add a little bit more.
Cool. Yeah, the initial hit is... I think I need a little bit of water because the initial hit had all those flavours, but it was quite like... It remained there for quite a while. It's quite strong, isn't it? So yeah, I need to sort of like give that... Open it up a little bit.
That water has really, really helped that.
It just, I mean, it's not about diluting down the alcohol. It's just about, as we were saying before, I always say it's a really boring explanation, the molecular structure changes. And I'm like, that's the chemistry dull answer. And every single time I say that, I have a chemist in my tasting. And I'm just like, You guys are really dumb. Yeah. It just opens up the flavour and pushes through, kind of, if you're getting something smaller, it'll just push it further through your palate and just take the alcohol down a little bit to give kind of your taste buds a chance to pick it up. But I adore Tambu, I really do. Tambu do this really crazy thing where they get all of their sherry casks from Jerez in Spain, but they use a barcode system. Sandy McIntyre, the distillery manager, is my absolute hero. I adore the man. And he basically just goes and he checks every single barcode on every single cask that comes in. And if he's not happy with how many times it's been used, he doesn't feel it's good enough, bang, it's out. It's absolutely out. And he has no problem with sending it all the way back to Spain saying, wow, not good enough, you know. Yeah, really personable. We the distillery's not actually open to the public, but Speyside have, like all of the islands, they have the Spirit of Speyside Festival, and Tambu tend to let the public in then. And we were lucky enough to get in 2 years ago, I think it was now. And they had this giant sherry cask, and like they took the bung out of it, and he said, does anybody have any questions? I was like, what does it smell like? Immediately, and he's like, well, come over and stick your face in it. So this big German guy had to wheelbarrow me over the top of it because it was absolutely massive. I put my face in the hole, and the hole was the size of my face. I came out, and he's like, what does it smell like? I was like, my nan at Christmas. Just proper strong sherry, you know, and he rolled it over. When he rolled the cast over, there's like this thick molasses that came out of the bottom. And that's exactly what the wood is impregnated with when the new make spirit goes in. And that's what it's when it's sitting in the warehouse and it's extracting and contracting. That's exactly what the whiskey's taking in and out, like this really thick sherry molasses. Amazing.
And
so
does,
cool.
Does that cause a coloration as well?
Yeah. None of these have colour added. You are legally allowed to add colour to whiskey. It's a colourant called E150. It's a caramel colourant. Some use it, some don't. There's a lot of transparency coming through with it now, so I think it is probably going to get to the stage where distilleries have to name that they are using it. Because again, it goes back to that kind of, as I was saying before, we are, you know, we pick the same seats, the same drinks, the same, we pick them on site, you know. We can see it even with our members. Our bottles are green, so that you can't see the colour of the whiskey, because people will just go, that's dark, that's a better whiskey. So if you're adding colour into it, it's going to persuade people that it's a better age, it's a better flavour. So it is seen as a little bit misleading, but the major brands do it. And it doesn't taste of anything, so for me, I don't see it as a huge issue. But then at the same time, I don't really drink any whiskey that has colour in it. So maybe that's quite telling as well. I do think in the future they will have to start saying that they are using colour. But all of the guys we have here today, none of them use any colourant.
Yeah, I'd
at
say
all.
Like if you put it in it, you've got to declare it, right? Because for all the company, for all the companies that are achieving that colour through the process that they are, you know, that it's a selling point, isn't it? You know, it's unique for the colour. If you're adding some dyeing there, I think you should declare it.
Well, for me, it's as simple as, you know, if you go and buy bread and you see a loaf of bread that's like white, you wouldn't buy it. You know, it's not got any browning on the crust or anything like that. It doesn't look ready. I think it's the same for whiskey, personally.
My dad used to sell, this is so crazy, Karen, my dad's business was based on things called colour graders, which were to test the colour of a loaf of bread.
Sure.
That was his business, was to when in these milleries, when they're making all the big mills, when they're making their bread, they want it a consistent colour. And so, they would literally test the colour of the powder before they started raising it. So, it's bizarre.
That tells you how important it is, like, you know, how important colour is and how much the consumer decides and makes a decision. And especially now, because we have so much to choose from. But people do very much go, oh, the colour on that must be a better whiskey. I see it all the time at work, constantly, that people think that a whiskey is better just because of the colour of it, which isn't always the case, because it could be colourant. But I don't know if you've seen in the press last week, Japanese whiskeys had a bit of a change in how it's described now, because we kind of went mad for Asian whiskey. We drank a lot of it. We mothballed a lot of distilleries, which means they can't produce.
Oh, right.
So they were buying... Yeah, they were buying a lot of base whiskey from Scotland and Canada and then taking it back to Japan and calling it single malt. And now it's been decreed that it can't be called single malt anymore unless it's actually made in Japan, which was never a legislation before. Right. So, I think that might change. It now has to be called a blended whiskey, a Japanese blended
whiskey.
Could that
then change, affect the value of the whiskies that they're selling? Because they're, is it like for people who invest in whiskey and stuff like that? Or is it like...
Not sure how it'll play out because it was only like 2 weeks ago that was actually decided. Some people knew about it already. I was fully aware that it was happening. And I understand it in a way because it just went off faster than they actually realised.
Yeah.
You know, which is a great success. But then whiskey isn't the easiest thing to produce quickly. You know, it has to be given time. So I can understand it in a way. But then I think, again, as with the colourant, transparency is important. You know, give people the information before
they
buy it.
Completely.
And then they know exactly what they're getting.
Especially because this was the one that I was drawn most to. And can I say my lips have been tingling throughout this conversation since trying number three.
Yeah. If you go to it now, you've added a bit of water. Yeah. It's had a bit of time. Your taste buds, again, have got over that shock thing. You should get a lot more flavour coming through now.
So true, you do. It's mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You know, the thing is, your taste buds, they go into shock and they think, what the hell is he doing? What is he putting in his mouth? Did he mean this? And they just go down straight away. So if you just take a little bit of time, let it open up, and then go again, your taste buds kind of go, oh, actually, he meant that. He intended to do that to us. And then they start taking in the flavour profile again.
Gorgeous.
Before we get on to whiskey number four, how did you end up getting this job?
Sneaking in as the foods.
I lied.
It come through being in the restaurant. Right, yeah. Okay, right.
What made you want to work within whiskey? Being from like a, you know, someone who was a fan of it to this is what I want as a career.
Yeah, I mean, for me, whiskey is probably the greatest made produce that there is, you know, because it has that legislation, which actually we have Glenlivet to thank for that. Glenlivet were in the age of kind of illicit stills and were in the area with the most densely populated illicit stills, but were still trying desperately to do it correctly. You know, they were selecting really good casks. They were using their own grain because he was there. Master Distiller was actually a farmer more than he was a distiller. So he was using all this great produce, going through the whole kind of rigmarole and lots of kind of bandits, robbers, bad people, thieves were making money, making this absolute hooch. And people were going blind. At one point, they were trying to get polio with it. Yeah, people were dying at the very least. And the head distiller actually went to the laird of, I think it was Abelur, Yeah, it would be Abelow. He went to him and said, basically, we need to do something about this. We need to bring in a legislation, you know. And the Laird said to him, yeah, of course we do. It's completely right. We should bring this in and stop kind of people dying and going blind. But he said, if we do that, they're going to kill you and they'll burn down the distillery. And he gave him two handguns and said, I can't defend you. And if you actually go to the Glenlivet distillery, they've got the two pistols on the wall. And it was because of Glenlivet, that's when the legislation came in for 3 years in an oak barrel, has to be over 40% proof. That's where all of that actually came from. Yeah, yeah. So for me, when it came to working with a product, you know, I used to work in restaurants as well. I always made sure I worked with the best chefs. So for me, whiskey is exactly the same. Everything's made to that process. So when it comes to spirits, it's, in my opinion, it's the best spirit you can work with, because I know everything that's behind me in bottles is absolutely beautiful. It's just a case of finding the right one for the person that's in front of me. So the hard work's kind of done for me. That's, you know, and it's done with such passion that, you know, and it's got such a romantic story to it as well. Like every single distillery has a different little idiosyncrasy, a different story, and, you know, how it came about. So yeah, it's always been very interesting for me. I used to work in cocktail bars as well, and the lads would always make bourbon cocktails and they were really good. So I thought, if I use a single malt, I'm going to beat you. So that also helped.
I went off bourbon years ago. I think I kind of liked it as a sweet alternative, you know, when I was 20, but I can't, it's unpalatable for me now. It really is. I just,
you should have a look at Balcones, who is Texas. Yeah, they're knocking out some really beautiful stuff at the moment. My company's actually now going to start bottling in the next few weeks, going to start bottling bourbon as well.
Balcones. But, okay, I'll have a look.
It's almost the same as international whiskey as well, you know. I have a huge allegiance with an Indian whiskey, Paul John. I did a side-by-side tasting with one of their brand ambassador with our bottles of Paul John from India and their core range as well. And the unique thing about really hot countries and whiskey is they get really humid really, really fast. So their flavours go often like a rocket. So it's really interesting. Like Paul John, we bottle their expressions at 5-year-old.
Wow.
Because the flavour is almost sitting at about a 15 to 20, like huge flavours, just because of humidity. And we use, you know, the Angel Share. We think that we lose Angel Share when we've got casks in warehouses. The Angel Share is made up of water because of humidity, because the temperature is so high. So they don't lose any alcohol at all, which is your flavour profile again, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know if you've ever had Kavalan from Taiwan, Taiwanese whiskey.
I have had Thai whiskey, but I don't think I've had that one. I've had...
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. And I mean, for me, it's one of the first whiskies. You know, you read the back of the bottles and it says that you should be getting like apple pips and green grass. And I'm not getting any of that. It had like lychees and pineapple and tropical fruit. And straight away, as soon as I tasted it, and I was in a really shitty mood because my friend was about 3 hours late. And immediately when I tasted it, it was the first whiskey that I got that I matched everything. And again, it's humidity. They use sterling steel, copper rods and cooling rods to bring down the temperature because it's so hot. So they get these massive flavours that we could never, ever reach because of the actual temperature of the country. It's amazing. Yeah.
Wow. A good reason.
It's not going to be a problem in Scotland, is it?
No. No. If we had 400 years and a fire underneath it.
Should we try number four?
Yeah, let's do it.
Are you ready, Chris?
Yeah, I'm ready. Absolutely ready.
Definitely. So number four comes from the tiny, tiny, tiny region of Campbelltown.
Hello.
Campbelltown used to be the most densely distilled area of Scotland with 35 distilleries back in the day. But it got horribly let down by the fact that it was meant to get a railway and it never did. And the distilleries of Speyside were all kind of built round railways. And so it just got left behind. It wasn't getting any material at all. And now they only have three, which is really tragic. I know, it's such a shame, such a shame. But this guy,
excuse me.
Bless you. Thank you. This one comes from, it's actually from Springbank. Don't know how much you've heard about Springbank. I love Springbank, but they are totally traditional. They don't do anything with computers whatsoever. They even write down the temperatures on blackboards. It's so basic. Wow. It's unbelievable. everything is still done by hand. And they actually are one of the few distilleries that actually get three different expressions under three different names.
Excuse me.
From that very basic kind of way of doing it, which I think is incredible. So this is Longrow. This is Longrow peated.
Nice.
Smell is peated.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but the...
Sorry, Karen, can I just ask, can you take some pictures of the bottles and send them over as well? Then we can show the listeners what we're drinking.
Yeah, definitely.
As well.
I mean, this one, they only produce it. Springbank don't get involved in anything like big glitzy kind of adverts. They don't really push anything that they're doing. It just comes out, and they've got such a huge following now because everything is so hand done and so kind of babysat all the way through that it will sell anyway. But they don't go chasing the big buck. They don't really care. They put out mass produced kind of Springbank. They stop production, and they also do Longrow, which is the one we have, and they do another one called Hazelburn, which is impeated, which is an even smaller kind of outgoings. But for me, beautiful whiskey. It's kind of, you've got that peat coming through and a little bit of kind of briny oiliness, but you've also got a lot of vanilla coming from the barrels, a lot of young fruit as well, so it balances out really nicely. I like to give this to people that tell me they don't like peated whiskey.
It's crazy you say that, Karen, because that's what I was going to say.
Hello.
Yeah, like I'm.
That's me.
I'm not the biggest peated whiskey fan. When you said pairing it with blue cheese, I was like, great, I'm going to give that a try. Because I'm not the biggest fan. But that, I must say, I really like it. I really do like it.
If you add a little bit of water to that as well, if you're not a huge fan of peat, you'll find it like the white fruit start coming through a bit more, the vanilla become a little bit more pronounced as well.
I'm looking forward to this because I've had a bottle. I mean, whiskey doesn't last long in my house, but that has sat there for so long. That's the only person that drinks that is when Chris has had too much to drink. I give him this.
Should you not be giving me more booze?
But at any given point, like I say, if I sit down and watch TV and I want to drink, I will have a whiskey. But I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah.
So I'm now all ears as to how I can change my palate and what's going to help that.
Chris, I would like to see he's still not drinking full measures, though.
Out
of his champagne flute.
He's cheating. The truth is, he's probably drunk the other lot before.
Do you know what? That's a lot different to that bottle of stuff I just showed you. That's incredible. Oh, my God.
So good, it's much better.
So good. And that's the thing, like, you know, there's so many different varieties out there now. And people talk about regions all the time. And when I first started in whiskey, which wasn't last week, funny enough, it was very much kind of lowlands were soft, a little bit honeyed. Highland was soft fruit, getting a little bit richer. Speyside was sherried, and then you had Islay was peat. You know, there was little mention of Campbelltown because nobody cares that there's only three of them now. And that's kind of the way people looked at it. But obviously in the world of whiskey now, they kind of know it's an open market. Everybody wants to drink it. Yeah. Everybody's loving it, buying it. So you're getting peated varieties coming from different areas. You can see Glenfiddich did Fire and Cane, which had a little bit of peat in it as well. So things are starting to open up a lot more now. But people have those experiences of kind of the Laphroaig or the Coleela or the Lagavulin as the first peated whiskey and go, that's disgusting, don't give that to me again, you know. And I think the responsibility lies also with people behind bars going, how much whiskey have you had? None. Okay, don't start with a Laphroaig, please. You know, it's going to burn your head off.
Yeah.
And it is about tasting different things and trusting bar staff as well, because they will find you. You know, there's a lot of different degrees of peated smoky whiskey now. Some are a little bit kind of heather smoked. You get a bit of barbecued flavours coming through. Some are finished in sherry casks, so you get a sweeter finish. So it's all very approachable, but it's about tasting and enjoying as much as you can.
As an ambassador, have you got to like all peated whiskies and not? Do you lean towards peated whiskies?
I didn't used to. I was kind of more Speyside, very much so. And I still am a huge fan. It definitely is where I sit, you know. But then there is, I think as you start to, I mean, the best way to educate yourself is to taste it. You know, you can read as many books as you like, but the best way to kind of educate your palate and get out there and taste things is just get involved in it. And I think also working for the company that I do, that whole idea that you don't look at what the names are of the distillery, it works incredibly. because there's stuff that I probably wouldn't have entertained that I absolutely love now. And I mean, that's a peated whiskey. The next one's a peated whiskey, and I've got about six in my collection now, which I probably wouldn't have had otherwise. So yeah, it's definitely about the tasting. Yeah.
I agree with that. And I kind of like how your company does that, because I think it takes away any prejudice or presuppositions you have on what you're about to try. So yeah, it's a great way of doing it completely.
Yeah. And I mean, I know every time you walk into a bar, you know what you're going to drink that night, you know. But before you even meet your friends, you're like, I feel like a pint, I'm up for some bubbles, you know already. So if you're going to go out and drink whiskey, which you're braver than me if you drink it right from the start, I have an 11 o'clock rule on a film night out. Don't drink it before 11 because things are going to go pear-shaped quite quick. We have a friend who's like 6'5", and me and my best friend are probably, she's probably a little bit bigger than me, but not much. We're hitting 5'8" max. And we have to put him on buses regularly because he stands. And he's actually still, he stays with his mum because she's not very well. And she always says, "Were you drinking with the big girl, the little girls tonight?" Stuffing him on a bus.
I mean, oh, incredible.
What it's all about, you know, it's, and for me, like, I think bottles are meant to be opened, they're meant to be enjoyed, they're meant to be shared. And that's how you find out even more how much you like, you know. It's about friends saying, "I absolutely love this, you know, I think you would like this." I mean, especially now during lockdown, Stu knows this better than most. Every time I go out with my friends for a walk, I take a hip flask everywhere I go. And it's like, yeah, there's always certain points that there's whiskey getting shared about, you know, and it's, yeah, it's important.
Do you know when I took full advice there, and I went out for a stroll with my mate on Saturday, and we got to the park, and I was like, there you go. And we just got, like, literally I bought a couple of miniatures in, like, the off license, and I went, "Here you go." And like, and he went, "Do we have to sit on the bench if we're drinking like neat whiskey in a park?" And obviously where we live's not too pretty. And we went for the full kind of we looked a bit of a sorrowful sight, just two middle-aged men just necking neat whiskey from miniatures on a bench in a park. But it was glorious.
Yeah, I love it. It's the best coping mechanism ever. I've got these little, like, Glenfiddich dram glasses that are made out of the same copper as the stills. So I look a bit bougie.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You just see all these husbands that are getting dragged out for walks just looking like, "Oh, fucking hell."
I want to be in her gang.
Yeah, totally. But, I mean, you know, we don't have a lot. Well, it's getting better now. We've got a kind of glimmer of hope, but we haven't had a lot to get excited about. So, you know, when you see your friends, take a drop of whiskey. You know, it makes everything seem a hell of a lot better in my eyes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, before we move on to the last one, Karen? This is an Irish whiskey, but what? Like, I've never tried it, but what was been? You know, Conor McGregor made one called Proper 12. I mean, you, like, being a Scotch, the Scotch whiskey gang, do you ever sort of, like, keep your eye out of what the competitors or what the rest of the world is doing? What was that like, Proper 12? Is it crap?
It's not to my palate, I would say. I love Irish whiskey. There's a lot of arguments between Scottish and Irish about who did it first. I think, going off record, I'd probably get chinned for this, but I think Irish actually do have record of doing it first.
Yeah.
It was actually the guys, it's the spirit company that own Jose Tequila, that own, well, that manufactured that.
Right.
And today, I don't know if it's been actually kind of cleared up or not, but it looks like Conor McGregor's been bought out.
They had
20% holdings of that, and I think they've just taken 50% from him, whether they paid him or not. So I'm not entirely sure what's going on there.
Well, his career's on the dam, but you know, like, I mean, obviously he's been absolutely, you know, been trauma.
I loved him. Like, I absolutely loved him. I thought he was incredible, but yeah.
We all did, but he kind of ended up seeing a different side, and I guess obviously however many losses on the bounce. One loss, but then before that a few. You just think, well, maybe where's his career going to go now? He's not got that untouchable kind of marketing kind of angle anymore. And everyone I know that I've not tried it, but I've not heard a good review of it
really
yet.
Wow.
Everybody I know that, and speaking of kind of like brands that have kind of... I got someone bought me a bottle of the Pogues whiskey at Christmas. Have you tried that, Karen?
Yeah.
I thought that was okay.
Yeah, so do I. But the thing is, for me, the money wasn't pushed into having Shane McGowan as a frontman because
no,
nobody would pick that face to front up a campaign. And I think that's the important thing. He did exactly the same with David Beckham as well. He died a death. They bought a Chanel bottle and they put David Beckham in a very expensive, beautiful velvet blazer. Whereas for me, do what these guys are doing. Put it into your produce. Yeah. Put it in your bottle. Put it into your product and let it speak for itself. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wouldn't take advice from David Beckham, as much as I think he's a fantastic guy, on whiskey, or Conor McGregor, because both of them look like they'd be tarts in the pub. So,
yeah.
So it's like, for me, put that into the barrel, put that into the cask that you're using, put it into the person that's standing in your still, tasting the new make every single day and making sure that it's right, and then I'll buy it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful thing, like you said about Glenfiddich as well. That just makes me even happier to be a big fan of them. Yeah, completely.
Exactly. Same with these guys as well, the one that we've just tasted, the Longmorn Family Run.
Right.
One of the few. And I mean, I've seen pictures inside that distillery because they can't get in because they don't give an arse about making money by getting tourists to it. And it's literally blackboards. You know, you go into others and there's I mean, most are complete computerized. It makes sense, you know. You've got molecular chemistry going on, but they are doing everything by hand, absolutely everything, still to this day. It's almost like a museum.
It's magical, that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's a bit of survival of the fittest as well, because as you said, like, a lot of the distilleries around there died a death because of the poor links, and yet, like, the last few that survived, there must be something in what they're doing.
And also, they're not chasing any big campaigns. They're not rushing after personalities. They're not doing really crazy priced, mass produced whiskey. They're just doing little drops and going, here you go. There's a 17-year-old that's been in a Madeira cask. Enjoy. And everybody goes nuts for it, you know? So, I mean, I can understand why Connor's been bought out. He's probably made a lot of money off it, I'm sure he won't lose any sleep, you know, but he's not going to be in a ring anymore, winning any fights and drinking at the end. So why keep him there? That's kind of my theory on it, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Unfortunately, definitely. I'd love to see him win a fight and turn it all around, but not going to happen, is it?
Should we do number five?
Yeah. So number five again is another peated whiskey.
Oh, I like this. Smells good as well.
Oh, that smells quite different.
So this is our other top recommendation for 2020. This is the Ardbeg, 5-year-old wee beastie. Just came out at the end of last year. I'm not a huge Ardbeg stan, I'll say. There is a lot of people that are. It's got its own committee, which is huge fans that follow it. And every single expression that comes out, they buy it in its droves. Tends to be a little bit older and very expensive. Then all of a sudden, Wee Beastie came out last year, 5-year-old, and coming in at £36. Nice. I say, okay, that's a different narrative. It started off in bourbon cask, and it's gone into Oloroso sherry cask. So you're going to get a bit of vanilla and fruit from the bourbon to begin with. You've got that lovely smokiness coming through, and you should get a long, sweet finish from it as well. And for me, again, like the Nick Nairn at the start, it's one of the most outstanding whiskies of 2020.
Right, I've just tried a bit. What do you think, Stu?
I'm going in there.
Going in.
I really like that.
Yeah. If you add a little bit of water to that one, because it is coming up, I think it's 47, is it? Yeah, 47.4%. Just to open out a bit of the sweetness as well. How are you getting on with that, Chris?
That's my least favourite. The ones that we've tried today, yeah, definitely.
It is the peated one.
Yeah, I think that might be. Yeah, there's quite a lot of strong flavours coming through there, and the peatiness. I don't know what it is. It's I can't quite put my finger on what it is. It's not like the strength of the alcohol. It's a combination of the flavours there. It's just I'm just not quite attuned to. But you're loving it.
I think that's less peaty than the last one.
Really.
Really?
I would
try it again, but I've seen the other one off now. That yeah, that yeah, definitely. I didn't think that. I found this more recent one the more peaty of the two.
That's good.
But yeah, you're a big fan of that one, then, Stuart.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it above the first three, but of the two peaty ones, yeah, I preferred that.
You preferred that one.
Yeah.
And what was this brand called? This one again?
That's Ardbeg.
Ardbeg, that's it. Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. So this.
So I mean, Ardbeg are known for, you know, Isla smoky peated whiskey. It tends to be a lot older. They brought out the 5-year-old, which for me is amazing because. We do, at the Society, it's a little bit different because we bottle on flavour. So we have spirit selectors who are in charge of taking samples from the distilleries. They decide if we're going to take that cask or not, if we want it. And then they are tasting that cask constantly, deciding if it's ready to go or not. Whereas your likes of Glenfiddich, Ardbeg, you know, your bigger brands will have, they have to make a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 14, a 16, they've got the core range. So it has to get to a certain stage before they can bottle it. We have a lot more freedom because we don't have to meet any requirements whatsoever. So once something's ready, we think it's at that peak time, we bottle it. So we do have some younger whiskies, and some members will be a little bit like, oh, young's not good. And it's like, it is. It really is. It absolutely is. So for a big distillery like Ardbeg to come out and make a 5-year-old, and it comes in at £36.
Yeah.
Immediately, I was like, this is brilliant. This is the narrative that we need. You know, it's really good. People need to get a little bit more kind of open to drinking whiskey when it's ready, and there's nothing wrong with
it. Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, it's got to be down to flavour, right? Not just being pretentious about what you're drinking.
It's just about the enjoyment, you know? I mean, there's a lot of arguments about older whiskey being better and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, there is some out there, you know, I have a couple that are ancient and the distilleries don't even exist anymore, yeah. And they are amazing. But I don't think that's the guiding route. There's no rules. It doesn't have any.
What's the best way to keep it, to keep whiskey? Like if you're storing these older whiskies, how should you keep them in your house?
I mean, your bottles are airtight. So your cork bottles, but I mean, like everything, corks will degrade, and there's a bit of argument about oxidization once you start getting down to the very lower levels of bottles, because obviously there's more air in the bottle than there is whiskey.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to suppose that once it gets to that stage, but unless you're keeping it for 30 years.
Yeah.
I don't know who would tell you or how they would tell you. If you keep them booze for 30 years, you're doing it all wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what dictates what whiskey you drink? So for instance, you've kind of made us think that you've got a nice whiskey collection at home. So for instance, it's Friday night, it's 9 o'clock, and you just think, well, I've had my dinner, I'm gonna sit down, or I'm gonna have a whiskey. What dictates what you drink?
I suppose it's mood, what you've eaten, how you're feeling. You know, I normally kind of think about, well, what do I want? Do I want something quite big and punchy? Do I want something a little bit mellow? Do I want a breakfast whiskey? You know, where am I at that point? You know, and I mean, obviously what you have is your favourites. I mean, I sent my best mate a picture of the whiskies that I'd chosen. She's like, how do you pick your favourite out of that? You love them all. And I was like, yeah, that's a problem because they've all come out of my own collection. I own all. So yeah, but it's just whatever mood or what I feel like at the time. I mean, the fact that I own them, I already know that I like them. So, you know, there's not a wrong and in there, so it's all good.
And of the five, what's your go-to?
Out of the five, that's a hard one. Breakfast whiskey-wise, kind of any time of the day, any mood, I'd probably say the Nook Nane, which is kind of nuts because it's a brand new whiskey. The one that I always have in my collection, without a doubt, I'll always have a Tam Du. It took me a long time, probably till about last year, to actually admit that was probably my favourite distillery. Probably is. Because it's a big thing, you know. You have a lot of whiskey. I always have a Glenfiddich or more than one in my house of some description, because I just think it's on the money. It's easily attainable, which I think is super important. I got in a fight once in a whiskey shop because the owner made a comment that something was a supermarket whiskey, and immediately I was like, but what's wrong with that? And he was like, well, you should know, you work in the whiskey industry. And I was like, no, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with a whiskey being attainable to people that wouldn't come into my work, that wouldn't come to your shop.
Absolutely.
And wouldn't go to the market. Because for me, it's about everybody enjoying it. I was like, so if somebody sees a blended whiskey next to a single malt on a promotion because a supermarket can buy more at a lower price and then decides to drink a single malt to start a beautiful journey. So I have absolutely no issue with whiskey being in supermarkets at all. So yeah, Glenfiddich's always in there. But I mean, I love them all. I honestly do. They're all hand selected.
I mean, I asked you to pick one, but you've then just reeled off three or four of the five and said how great they all are. Come on, get off the fence.
Get off the fence. Maybe Tamdu then, if I have to pick.
How about you then, Shu? What would yours be?
Number three.
Okay. Good shout. I'm torn between one and two. Got to be honest with you. I've really, nice. Really am torn between those guys. Three was lovely, and as I say, as in terms of a peaty whiskey, four. Did the job as well. It's just about the right level for me. So yeah, but probably between one and two, it's difficult. It's a toss up.
Did you save some of the whiskey to go back and taste it again?
Yeah.
Okay. So go back into number one and see what you think now.
I want to go back to number three.
If I go back to one now, I'm getting lots of peaches. I'm getting tons of flowers on the nose. It's totally
That's crazy.
Opened up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, that's really good.
I just went back to three. And after finishing that peaty one and going back to three, incredible.
Sold on the Tamdu.
I have got a lovely sense of warm well-being in my chest right now.
That lovely warm glow.
Oh, it's wonderful. it really is. Karen, if people want to find out a little bit more about what you do and the society, where can they do that?
We have website, smws.co.uk. I work at Queen Street in Edinburgh. If they want to even go back to basics and talk to somebody, just pick up the phone. We have memberships, which mean that you can actually buy whiskey from the society and you can also go in the members room. But we also have a public bar on Queen Street as well. So all and sundry is welcome in there too.
I'm going to say, Karen, you're going to see me up there. When COVID's over, me and my girlfriend are desperate to get back to Edinburgh, and we, you know, I'm gonna pop something in my calendar to come and see you guys because
definitely give me a shout. Honestly,
oh thanks, Karen.
Normally in the members bar, I'm sure I can sneak in. It's not a big issue.
Thank you so much. Very kind.
We've got 700 bottles of whiskey open at the moment, so you know.
Wow. It's my favourite place on the planet, Scotland, by a mile, and every time I go. Always make sure I go home via Edinburgh, and it's just a beautiful city. It really is, and I just like the idea of waiting there because it is a bit of a drive, and if I can jump on a plane, I'll tell you what I did do, not the last time, but the time before, I done the sleeper train. Have you done that?
No.
Ah. Is it the Caledonian Express? I think it's called.
The Caledonian Express.
And got on there. I went past Edinburgh, actually, and went up to, that's where we went, the Nevis Jew. Where's the Harry Potter kind of viaduct? Fort William.
Yeah.
So I went up to Fort William, but then come back on there. And that's a good way to travel. Having a little whiskey on the train, then going to sleep.
Nice.
Like going to sleep somewhere in the Midlands and waking up and opening the curtains in your little carriage, and then you just think, oh, look at that. There's mountains and stuff.
Amazing.
That's nice. Yeah, I can't recommend that enough. I'm quite fucking pissed.
My job is done.
Karen,
bear in mind, I do these tastings on like 12:30 on a Saturday morning, and I remember we've had quite a few raucous nights out where it's been a little bit like some people haven't turned in, and then you have to go and do a tasting afterwards. But thankfully, I don't ever get hangovers, so it's like, okay.
Wow. I'll tell you what I propose. I propose this, that when June comes and if the restrictions are dropped and we can start to, resume a nice, happy sort of normality, then Chris and I should come up there. We should get the train up or
I'd love that,
out
mate.
And do a top five live.
Oh, that'd be so cool, Shu. Because we actually Karen, we need to go wild swimming, and I think Scotland would probably be an epic place for that, Shu. Let's be honest. So why don't we could do something like that, couldn't we?
Yeah, it'd be nice to swim in Loch Ness again, and this time it not just be me in the middle of winter. Saying to my daughter, I don't want to go in. No, I want to go in. I don't want to go in. I want to go in. Are you just going to get in and then scream and I'm going to pick you up? No, I won't do that. And then we went in. And then the minute I got in, she screamed. And I then just held it above my head for ages until we got out. I was like, it's a stick. It's not a monster. But yeah, Scotland's one of the best places you can have a little wild swim. It's beautiful.
Yeah, definitely, man. I'd be up for that, totally. And I mean, it's nice to... These are all core range whiskies, you know. If you get in our place, it's completely different. Cask strength, even more hilarity. Beautiful venue, beautiful city. Definitely.
Right.
Karen, thank you so much. Yeah. Thanks for this today. It's been a real education on a subject that,
thoroughly enjoyed it. And keep drinking highballs, man. I'm going to switch over to highballs very, very soon. For me, whiskey's like, it's not really a summer drink for me. We used to work in a bar that had like a sun trap out in the front, and you get all these tourists coming and they'd be sitting sweltering outside on the 2 days that Scotland's hot. And I'd say to my friend, why are they drinking whiskey in the sunshine like that? Like, fucking horrible. But highballs are definitely the way forward. And if you're not a massive fan of whiskey, it's a great introduction.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah. I love a whiskey and ginger ale. I did a really stupid thing, actually. Chris, you'll appreciate this as a vegan. And I had a load of ginger in my house and I wasn't going to use it at all. So I was like, I'm just going to make a ginger syrup. So I made a ginger syrup to make highballs. And my brother was like, that's a really good way to like not waste food. And I was like, yeah, but I also like knuckled 3/4 of a bottle of Glenfiddich. Then I need to buy more whiskey because it was very boring.
I might have to try that myself.
Yeah, definitely. It's danger, though. It is danger, but it's very good.
Karen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. And it's been educational, and I'm pissed. So that's a win-win.
Win-win. Good Wednesday.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Take care.
Thank you. It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.